Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the Worldbuilding Podcast, where we throw spaghetti at the wall, and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. Welcome, folks, to another Takeout episode today. We are going to be discussing Harry Potter. I'm not singing that theme music because I don't want to get sued.
This is our second Takeout episode, which is just a way for us to take a singular property, in this case, Harry Potter, and find some pieces of its worldbuilding that we think are really cool or could be improved upon, and see how we could broaden out and apply it to another piece of you know, whatever you're working on.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be another. There are so many videos out there pointing out the flaws in Harry Potter and in Star Wars and in every other media. Like, a lot of world building does not stand up to scrutiny.
And Harry Potter's a pretty egregious example.
It's pretty bad. Also, fuck J.K. Rowling. She's a piece of shit. However, the world she created,
iconic.
Iconic and really fun. A lot of it, as Brendan Lee Mulligan said, is the work done by John Williams.
Yeah.
And the movies making it just seem so fantastical and whimsical and beautiful.
I saw an interview with him and Matt Mercer, and they were talking about the, oh yeah, you want to shit on the Harry Potter world building, but all you fuckers know your Patronus charm and your Hogwarts house. And I was like, yeah, that's a good point. That's great world building. Absolutely. Those are iconic, and they do not, like, there's so much of this world that doesn't stand up to scrutiny, but we all know about it, and that says something. So
completely.
Let's take some of the cool ideas that she does have and talk. And we have given it praise plenty of times in the past, and we've also shat on it many times in the past. So,
and we will continue to do so.
So,
with great relish on both accounts.
Do we want to talk more a little bit about some of the cool little like nods we want to give, or do we want to just get right into the things that?
After we've just said all this thing about not shitting on it, there is one thing that I thought was fucking hilarious when I was prepping for this. I was watching some bouncing around YouTube and looking around different videos about what cool stuff is out there in Harry Potter, and of course I came across one from Brennan where he's talking to someone. Ask him, you know, what's the greatest, or he asked someone, what's the greatest, the most powerful form of magic? And someone says, friendship. He's like, friendship? Are you fucking kidding me? No. What are you? It's chronomancy. He's like, the greatest power of friendship is love. So are you suggesting that everyone out there who was successfully killed by Avada Kedavra wasn't loved enough? That's terrible. Fuck you. I died. It was so funny.
Yeah.
And so it's a glaring hole in there. Wonderful for storytelling.
Yeah.
Terrible for world building.
Yeah.
But absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
I did like the idea, though, of a cool idea, not the main one that we're going to talk about, of the idea of a self-sacrifice or of a sacrifice providing a magical shield around something.
Yeah.
I think that's a cool idea that you can take and apply elsewhere.
Yeah. It's a great way to say that is a... that is a counter that can exist. It's a counterspell. Is I'm willing to sacrifice my life to counterspell your ultra powerful spell.
Right. But save my party.
Yes. Or save my loved one or save whoever. Right. And like, that's obviously great for storytelling. It's the only reason Harry Potter exists as a franchise is because of that moment. So I think that is, that's a cool little thing that you could extract elsewhere. I think, you know, stuff like the Hogwarts houses, which are just based off of general British schooling and Oxford and all that. But you can take that and you can make it not problematic by, I think, really just not boiling down children into one singular trait. As Patrick Rothfuss said, it's like, here, you can be defined by one thing. Right. Now, good luck being mentally healthy in the next 20 years. I think if this is tracking. And if you stop making Slytherins like just evil by default and just saying, well, we'll just make sure we stereotype. Like, that's kind of all the Hogwarts houses do, but they are really cool, like the Hogwarts, the house common rooms, the robes, the colors. There's so much that feels so...
The cult mentality.
Oh, we love a cult.
We love a cult.
We're Americans. We're run by a cult. The vibes of that are so good, and you can kind of just, you can use that in any way, but that's based off of just general houses of the world, but I don't know. There's a lot that's really lovely in their world building. It's very cozy.
It's super cozy. It's the cottage core of world building.
And I think
outside of Studio Ghibli.
And I think that's why its world building is so thin, is because if you made it fully fleshed out, the coziness wouldn't exist.
Yeah, it's large because it exists. If you adopt Brandon Sanderson's view of hard versus soft magic systems, which is the strength of the hardness of a magic system, is determinant on its ability for characters to use it to solve a problem, I think the same principle applies to world building. Like, people are not trying to use the very specific nuances of the world in Harry Potter to solve problems.
Yeah,
solve
because they don't solve any problems. Famously. They literally, their entire thing is just like, let's just stay secret.
World War II very much still, I mean, like, it doesn't.
They're like, oh, genocide? No.
Meh.
We're not going to deal with that.
Meh. Literally, it would take 2 seconds to solve.
We have moved into slightly shitting on it.
But the point is that, yes, I think Cozy is completely accurate. I think it gets the... Because I was just going to say vibes-based, but what are the vibes? They're cozy. They're cozy vibes.
Yeah. There's a reason we all watch it at Christmas. Yeah.
I also think the Thestrals are fantastic.
They're phenomenal. We talked about them recently.
We did. I can't remember on what episode or what brought them up, but I just want to give a... I just want to reiterate my love for them.
Cool. All right. Tell me, what is the thing that you want to take... What's the takeout you're ordering from Harry Potter?
I want to talk about a very small... I want to take something real small and draw some very large conclusions from it. I want to talk about Sectum Sempra.
The spell that Harry finds in the Half-Blood Prince?
Correct. That Snape invented.
Okay.
Because he said Sectum Sempra for enemies in the book. That was the phrase.
Yeah, and he uses his own enemy, not knowing what
he
it's going
to do. He uses it on Draco, not knowing what the hell it was going to do. And then it turns into this invisible knife thrower.
Which was pretty fucking
Which was great.
Metal.
But you'd never seen that before. And he just used a spell that no one had ever heard of before because Snape invented it. And I was like, Snape invented magic. He created a spell. Does that mean, theoretically, in the Harry Potter world, that anyone with a basic knowledge of Latin could just start throwing out spells? Like,
just start saying Latin words,
just trying to combine them and waving your wand around until you figure it out. Like, it got me thinking, how the hell does someone create a spell? That's fucking cool. And then I started thinking about, well, in the 7th book, then there's this whole big deal made about the fact that Voldemort is flying without the use of a broom or a flying motorcycle or something. He's flying on his own, which up until that point, no one had ever done before. So he clearly invented some new form of magic as well, or a new spell that allowed a human unassisted flight.
Yeah.
Like, people are starting to invent magic. That doesn't happen super often in media. It happens a little bit in D&D, you know, like, you have some spells, and I'm stealing now from Matt Colville, but where it's like, you know, you've got Bigby's hand because Bigby invented it, or you've got Mordenkainen's magnificent mansion.
Yeah.
And you know who invented it. They're the ones that invented that spell. That was the Circle of Eight. But who the fuck invented Fireball?
Just some college kid.
Right? But I started thinking the creation of magic is really interesting because so many stories are focused on learning of magic or rediscovery. Like, everyone's trying to find, it's archaeology. They're trying to find and unearth some ancient, lost, forbidden, terrible magic. It's this idea in fantasy
that you have to go backwards.
You have to go backwards to find something. Even in shows like Dragon Ball Z, Vegeta's constantly saying, are you ready to see a power that's not been seen for thousands of years? He says it like every other fucking episode. It's like you're always trying to rediscover
the past.
Some great past. I want to see more about the creation of magic. I want to see someone actually thinking through how do I take what we've learned and discovered already and add to it. That's a really cool idea to me.
I have a few reactions. First, it's crazy that he invented that when he was a 6-year.
Yeah.
He invented
that. He was a kid.
He invented that spell. Did he use it on somebody?
Probably.
Who the fuck did he kill? Snape just murdered a guy in high school and then just got away with it? Holy shit. Or did he just test it on like a
suddenly
fucking...
Suddenly all the birds in the Hogwarts just stopped chirping.
Fucking psychopath behavior. I'm that's how insane. They start. So anyway, that's...
Like, Lily dodged a fucking bullet.
She dodged several knives. So that's interesting. And then thinking about it, like in the Hogwarts and the Harry Potter example is that that's like the... Like that book is a great insight into Snape. And it's a great insight into the fact that these professors are supposed to be the best wizards, right? Like, they hire Lockhart because they're like, he's the greatest, you know, slayer of dark, you know, beasts in the world, and he's fucking fraud, obviously. But like, they're trying to get people who are so good at this, but we never really get a sense of that. And, you know, like,
yeah.
And I mean, it's told from the perspective of children. It's a children's book. Sure. These are children's books. And like, your teachers are not fully fleshed out humans when you're a kid.
No.
But when you get to be like in late high school and into college, you have a sense of how accomplished they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you have the ability to comprehend that. By the end of the stories, we should be learning that McGonagall invented this spell and invented that spell and is right. responsible for all these things. But all we know is Snape is really good at potions because he has a whole book about it.
Right.
And he invented this spell.
That he went out of his way. He found shortcuts
yeah.
that are better than the book. And like who's out here doing the research? And I'm not saying that every teacher has to do their own research. I mean, in America, we push that, but there's a great point that sometimes teaching is more important than creating on
absolutely.
Your own. And so I think that there is something to be said for research not being the primary focus. But I think we got to include some research. Where is it happening?
The Ministry of Magic, where's their research?
Yeah.
Is there a wing of researchers at the Ministry of Magic? Why isn't there like...
Where's their CERN?
Yeah. Why doesn't that exist? So, okay. So say you're looking at any other world, we're applying these to other worlds,
right?
And you have a wizarding school, there should be like, because like, you know, you have a lot of schools where you have the just the research faculty and then you have teaching faculty,
right? Like a teaching hospital.
Yeah, like I mean, I went to a liberal arts college. They all are just there to teach,
right?
And then like, so these are just the teachers, and then there are other people at other places that only do research. That's their entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't there
like the Bell Labs of
yeah. Shout out to Severance.
Bell Labs is a real.
Yeah, yeah, but Bell Labs, they're the building that they have in New Jersey. It's like oh, iconic right, building right, right. is being used for Severance.
Sorry, yeah, 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 gotcha.
Anyway, yeah, like have these research setups. Why don't those? They should be a wizarding school should be inventing a new spell once a year, every couple of years.
Yeah.
You should be in a D&D campaign where you have a wizard who is out and about, and then when you come back to the capital city after like a 6 month. In-game module, you go to the wizarding school and you get an update on where they're at with this one spell that's progressing, and the DM hands an experimental spell to that player and says, go workshop this, come back and tell the school what you learned, and then you as the DM can edit the spell and say, okay, now here's the final version of this homebrewed spell that you get to use now because this is a research institution and you're a part of it.
I fucking adore that. Also, what role would you make someone do to defend their dissertation?
Oh, I feel like it has to be persuasion, right?
Or is it arcana?
No, because you're just persuading a bunch of other academics to not
so,
be an
so
asshole.
So secondary stats for wizards has to be charisma?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think you go one or two ways. You have to really be good at arcana or be pretty good at persuasion. Like I think you roll on two. You roll on both of those axes.
Yeah.
But
it's that type of thing. Like, and I think I touched on this in one of our previous episodes where I was saying, you know, I want full on. In the real world, in an ideal state, a bachelor's degree means that you have mastered the basics of some area of knowledge, right? A master's degree means that you have mastered the totality of it. A doctorate is when you are contributing to the body of knowledge.
Yes.
I think the same principle should exist. I love your idea of the DM handing you one. I think also that would be a great hook for a player to work out with their DM to say, I want to invent I'm tired of lightning bolt and fireball. I want to invent a lightning ball.
Yeah.
And like you have to go out there to figure out how to do it and work with your DM to come up with that. Right. And that mechanic is a great idea.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, there are rules in like the D&D books about how to create spells, but from a like,
are there?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think so.
Huh.
I think in the D&D handbook or the DM's
still
guide,
regardless.
Whatever, but, yeah.
More people should be using it. Is my point.
Yeah. But I think like for something like that, it's like, that's pretty simple too, where it's like, here's just a story reason for you to do a thing where I'm literally just going to change the damage type right. of a spell. But I think in a more, you know, non-TTRPG sense, you know, if you have a world where the, you know, in Harry Potter, the technology that we see that these wizards deploy is old and isn't evolving. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We don't know of any of these, of any tech magic, you know, any magic that, that is yeah. new.
Right.
It's, you know, it really lingering in the past.
Right.
And maybe there's a subtle change over time, but there should be technology beyond just literal spells that is being invented.
I agree.
The real world, we have new tech all the time. We were talking for like 30 minutes about Vine earlier and early internet days and whatever. Like, Vine is not early internet, but you know, FYI.
It exists on the internet.
Yeah. But the, why didn't they invent why didn't they perfect the flu network? Why is it so hard to use the flu if you don't sit, like, you know, Harry fucks up barely mm-hmm. and then he goes to a different spot. Why don't you change that? Why can you write down the destination? What if you're mute? What if you're deaf and you can't, mm-hmm. you can't effectively pronounce, you know, why can't you just come up with a new tech on an existing magic?
Right. What is it about the time turner that makes it work? And can it be replicated in any other form?
Yeah. That, like, the research questions can be posed within stories, and you can say, well, no one knows yet. But you could also have one where it's like a research question has been posed by somebody and they're making progress.
I think part of it might be because research in real world, when you think about it, is so, like, it's actually, you can make it dramatic, but it's kind of boring, right? You have to control variables yeah. very specifically. You have to know exactly, right? It is a lot of grunt work and paperwork, which is my nightmare, but fuck it. That's a part of the fantasy world, is working through all that.
You could have had it at some point in the stories. Maybe early, they go to Diagon Alley. And, you know, when they see Lockhart doing his book signing and mm-hmm. to introduce him as a character, you know, same time you could go to another store and you can see Snape publishing a book of new potions.
Yeah.
Because we know he makes potions, and show that these people are reputable and good at their jobs.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's not prolific, no. but he's worked on this for a couple of years, and here's, I'm contributing, and it can be a throwaway. You can even just go through and just have a book on the shelf where it says Severus Snape, 50 new potions, and just that's it, and just never talk about it. But just showcasing that there is some level of progress
and innovation
in the magic. And it doesn't have to be in the face and it fully, because you don't, having to explain it and come up with so much hard magic to show its evolution, that's hard. But just have like a book in the background, that's easy.
Two things. One, Snape actually absolutely seems like the type of person who, if he were to do that, would just be 50 potions by Severus Snape. 50 more potions by Severus Snape. Yet another 50 potions by Severus Snape.
50 potions more. What's the 50 Shades of Grey titles?
Oh, 50... 50 potions, 50
potions potionier.
Yeah, yeah, something like, no, that's too whimsical for him. No. But I think that's very funny. Two, never once is it explained why Dumbledore is so powerful.
Yeah, it's just,
he is powerful, and we accept it because, like you said, teachers are like parental figures, you know, stand-ins for God.
And we know,
right?
He defeated Grindelwald back right. in the 40s, but or
is
whatever,
it that but... he makes connections between spells faster than others, that he's able to switch around, like you said, damage types better than others. Like, I don't know, but let's get some explanation into that and talk about, again, the innovative side of magic and learning, where we are creating, we are looking forward to the future and to progress, not just focused on uncovering the past.
Vote Ethan 2028. He's going to make magic again.
Hell yeah.
All right.
What you got?
All right, let's moving on to mine. I was thinking, I love everything that's in Diagon Alley. I think it's all great vibes.
Yeah, Diagon Alley is dope.
So cool. Really,
you know that the origin of the word is the phrase diagonally?
Interesting.
It's Diagon Alley diagonally, because she wanted apparently something to be like not,
yeah,
no. ironically, not straight and a little off off center.
Ollivander's wands are really interesting, and like, it's such like a throwaway in the first book, and it doesn't really, you know, and like, wand rules become obviously very relevant, especially at the end, but the wands in the beginning,
I have issues with the wand lore at the end, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, okay. But the idea of the setup of the wand works so well, and it is so magical. It's this here's this thing that's going to be with you for the rest of your career as a wizard, and it's special, it's yours, it will pick you. How lovely.
How magical.
This is my rifle. There are many like it, but this one is mine.
Oh yeah, I was thinking, this is my rifle, this is my gun.
No. I think this idea has been applied elsewhere to a degree of having the weapon be associated with a person.
Sure.
But I wanted to say, well, what if every single weapon in the world has, you know, like everybody has to pick their weapon and it has that same connective tissue of, it has the phoenix core, it has the dragon core, it's got the basilisk, whatever, you know, it has something within it that will align well with you and give it a special property. So this sword has a hippogriff feather in it, so it's incredibly light and flows through the air fast. This one has part of a phoenix in it. This sword, when you cut somebody, it will somewhat it will cauterize the wound. I don't know. Like there's something.
Or
some
you
flame
can
in
heal
it.
With it, or something.
Or it can catch fire, like the guy in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You can create some sort of special property with these, and then you have to pick them. And if it's not right, it won't be able to do its little special benefit, and it might not swing quite as well. It might be too heavy. It might be. It might be uncomfortable to hold, and the grip starts kind of warping itself, and it's like, you know, unable to really be wielded by you. And you can apply this to other weaponry as well. Maybe the bow and arrow can't shoot straight if you're not the right person to be shooting that bow and arrow.
And what if you had a bow that the string was like Medusa hair, and it was just, or Gorgon hair, so it was just strings of snakes.
Oh yeah, awesome. And so you can come up with 1,000 different versions of the same type of thing of what is, this one is made of a specific metal that is it's from that mountain and that mountain alone. It's from the pits of this volcano. That's where we got the metal that is made, being used in this, whatever. And that specialness goes a long way. And I wanted to just apply that to any other type of weapon or object. And that's kind of the end of the idea. But
it's a great idea. I think it reminded me, I think in the Forgotten Realms D&D world, I think one of the reasons, so the Githyanki have those, very famous silver swords that also do psychic damage. I think that's because they contain like elder brain nerve endings or something like that, or brain sick. Stem of a mind flayer, and that's why that's part of the core of the. I think that's. I could be wrong.
I don't care if you're wrong. That's canon now.
Yeah, right. Like that's
fuck
cool.
You, wizards. Come at us.
Right,
that's canon.
That's cool. They will send the Pinkertons after us.
That's true.
You're fine, wizards. You're
fine.
No, you know what? Fuck it. Send the Pinkertons.
Don't send the Pinkertons.
Don't send them to Kyle. I'll deal with them. I think that idea is great. I love what you... Something occurred to me about the magic of Harry Potter, of the world of Harry Potter, when you're talking about, oh, here is this wand that is specially chosen to me, right? Mm-hmm. It marks me as special just for reasons that I don't even understand.
Yeah.
Then I go to this magical school. Oh, here is your place in the world.
Yeah.
Here are your friends. This is who you are. This is your character.
Yeah.
That's the fantasy.
Yeah.
The fantasy is I'm special and I know my fucking place in the world. And it just eliminating all societal and existential dread.
All right. I think you're slightly projecting here.
Shut up.
But I don't think that's what makes it special, because I think that's just capturing what it is to be a kid.
No, I think that's, my point.
Yeah, at the beginning of school, like I remember the backpack, going to get the new backpack for the year and getting new notebooks. And then you'd show up on the first day of school and it was all so exciting on that first, and then you had your friends and you had your class. And you're like, okay, everything makes sense for a year.
Sure.
And then eventually, we've entered the age where that's,
the age of cynicism.
I think to your point, what she captured really well with the specialness of the wand and all that is that feeling of first day of school, at back to school shopping on steroids.
Yeah.
It is distilling that sensation for a child and for an adult who is being nostalgic. It's distilling that down to its purest form.
And so what I think a cool way to take this and apply it to another story would be, let's get into attunement.
Okay. Attunement's great.
All you need to attune to something in D&D is a short rest.
Yeah.
I actually thought the D&D movie did a great job of showing that you have to go through some type of personal self-discovery to attune to this magical thing. But that, I think, is a great way because, yes, it would be. I love what you're saying. I think now every weapon that I make will have some sort of fantastical creature. I think magical crafting is dope. Everyone should lean into it more. I think having a weapon that is, even if it was not built especially for you, I think having, let's zero into what it means to be aligned to and comfortable with a tool, yeah. Right? Where they say, oh, an expert swordsman, the sword is an extension of your arm. You're not even aware you're holding a sword, right? What does that process of attunement look like for your main character, for any of your characters, any of your party members to actually bond to a weapon and align to it and sync with it? What does that mean? What does that look like?
I think that's a question for the listener.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think,
but that's what I'm putting on them. Yeah, it's in the Harry Potter world, we saw it, right?
Yeah. It's, yeah, I don't really have a reaction to that other than you think about that, people at home. But you made a point there that I think is interesting that I want to go back to, which is the idea of that it's not made specially for you. And the wands weren't made specially for anybody. You showed up.
They were just made.
They were just made.
Yeah.
Who's making, shoes specially for themselves? You walk into the store and you try on shoes and then you walk away with the shoes that work for you. Why aren't they doing that with swords? Why aren't you people going into an armory, go into the blacksmith, and then they pick up the swords and they really try it, and they really, rather than just being like, oh, that looks nice. Oh, it's got a good weight to it. Good enough. Really try it. Like, give it a shot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I hear you. And I think that gets into this idea of attunement, which is, I remember when we were playing in your campaign, I wanted plate armor, right? And I ended up just buying some plate armor that I could find off of somebody, right? But what if I put it on and you're like, oh yeah, that one isn't, it's not even that it's not attuned to you. You don't vibe with that armor for some reason. And so it weighs twice as much for you.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. You gotta keep searching.
Yeah, interesting.
You gotta find another thing that will vibe with you, right? Like, that's the whole part of the Ollivander scene in the first book, is he's got to try all the different wands and they explode or they do the wrong thing. Or yeah, let's say maybe you try out a Holy Avenger, but it starts doing necrotic damage instead. And you're like, ah, this is clearly not meant for me.
Yeah.
Like, I am on the wrong path with this one.
Yeah. And before we conclude this one, I want to give you a time to quickly comment on the end of the movies and its wand logic.
It's bullshit.
Yes.
Quite frankly. It is a deus ex machina because she realized, I suspect that she realized towards the end of the book that she couldn't have Harry Potter be a killer. Because that was, she was setting them
You're
up to
kill her, Harry.
Yeah, she
I'm
was,
a what?
I'm a what? She was setting them up to fight to the death. She says it with the prophecy. None may live while the other, whatever bullshit she says.
Yeah.
So what, Harry Potter's just going to have to kill him? Avada Kedavra? She had to have some mechanic for making Harry Potter not be a killer. So that's why suddenly in the last book, we get all this shit about the wand lore and Harry beat Draco in a wrestling match who had disarmed Dumbledore. So technically because Harry dominated Draco, he actually controlled the Elder Wand. And that's why Voldemort couldn't kill him with it. Like, yep. What the fuck? Like, Harry, pull the trigger, man. Bow, bow. It's a net good for the world.
Yeah. Kill baby Hitler.
Absolutely. Not even. He's alive. He's fully living. Just kill Hitler.
True. Good complaint and a great little way to say that the logic of the weapon in the system that I'm talking about should be consistent, where, you know, it isn't, oh, well, you disarm me, now you get my thing.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be
that. That's really flimsy.
It's really flimsy, and it creates problems down the line. Yeah. And it doesn't really add anything on the front end either. So, All right. So then, Ethan, we don't do frozen lasagna for these takeouts because we've already eaten all the takeout. We forgot to order anything else. So why don't we just...
Yeah, what's stuck for you?
Whoa. What's stuck for you?
Jinx, you do it.
All right, I go first. I really like the idea of Snape and his books. I think is great, of the 50 the 50 potions thing. I think
50 more potions.
I think that's fantastic. I think that generally the idea of, like, I think the idea of the research is, like, just, you know, it works. Having institutions having a forward progress in the magic is fantastic, and I think that really stuck out to me as something that you can just use everywhere. And I really like we talk about, with kind of the feeling of what it is being at Ollivander's and what that represents. I think that's really, that sticks out to me just as, like, a great a great example of a good scene.
She knew her audience writing that first book.
There's, like, a reason she's a billionaire,
right? Absolutely.
Tax the rich.
Yeah.
What's stuck for you?
I think that idea of flipping the script by not having a fantasy world that's obsessed with the past. Like, you know, Matt Colville has a whole fantastic episode on dead empires, right?
What about the future empire?
What about the future empires, right? Yeah. Like, what about the
future magic?
Creation and innovation? Like, it is just being future-facing in these worlds, I think, is an interesting shift, and one that
It's harder to do because it's harder for anyone to imagine the future.
Absolutely.
And chasing innovation is difficult. Chasing, you know, from, like, a story perspective, it's easier to chase, well, I'm looking for this historical MacGuffin,
right?
Rather than, I'm looking for a future MacGuffin,
right?
That doesn't exist yet.
It's like, so I have to create it. It's very difficult, but I think something that could be worth the effort. I gotta say, I love the idea that you said about taking, let's get into why different weapons or tools will do different things
because of the core is different
of the core and the crafting. Like, get into that, man. Like, get really
don't just say it's enchanted and thus it does fire damage. Say that it was made with phoenix ashes, are, like, embedded in, and you can see the speckles of the phoenix ashes in the blade, and whenever it's on fire, the blade starts to, the ashes start to light up again, and then they each spark individual flames, and you swing it and you can see the flames, and then they go out.
It's popcorn world building, and everyone would
it works
lose their minds for that shit.
It's
so much fun. And, like, now you also said something, I don't think you were planning on saying it, but you said something like, oh, it's got a basilisk fang. Like, why aren't basilisk fangs a core for wands?
They're hard to find. I think there's not a lot of basilisks. I think it's just they're dangerous.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. But still, fun fact, the Elder Wand did have a core of Thestral hair. Like, oh, that's great.
Because it's dead.
Right. That's super cool. Like, I just thinking about that fun stuff and really digging into the bestiary for ideas for weapons and tools, I think great idea.
Yeah, I agree. I really love that. And especially now that I'm, like, thinking about that, the Phoenix Blade now, and then thinking about the other weapons and what they would look like and how that would forge, and that little moment, that narrative moment that you have of describing it to, like, usually a player in a D&D campaign of, like, what is this magic weapon that you now have and like how it manifests. I think that is now what stuck for me.
Yeah.
Is that the manifestation of that.
Yeah, of the crafting.
Yeah. Of the crafting.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, that's what stuck for us. Let us know what stuck for you.
Emails in the show notes. Please leave us a ranking on whatever subscription service you're using to listen to us on. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.